So in chapter 9, verse 22 of Megillah Esther, the pasuk says, "Kaimim asher nachu bayam yehudim oyvim v'chodesh asher ne'apach lehem yagon v'simcha ne'vel yom tov v'asot otam yemei mishta v'simcha u'mishloach manot ish l're'eu u'matanot l'avyonim." Mordechai and Esther declare as a celebration of the miracle that happened to send gifts to each other, mishloach manot, and to send gifts to the poor. Good.
No other yom tov at all.
Exactly. So question number one that we should be asking is, why? Why specifically in this holiday is there an obligation to send gifts to each other? That's question number one. Why Purim? Now the truth is, in Nehemiah, there is a story where there seems to be giving gifts to one another, and that was on Rosh Hashanah. So there's such a concept out there, but that does not become part of the law for the day. It just happened for some reason historically. But Dafka by Purim, there's something about giving gifts to each other. Not that no Levianim doesn't surprise us as much, to give poor to money to the poor. Right? There's actually a halacha that every holiday we would ideally give it before the holiday. So it's similar. But Mishloach Manot is really unique. Okay? So the first question is, why Purim with Mishloach Manot and Matanot Levanim? So what do you guys think? What's the answer? Why do you think Dafka, Mordechai, and Esther would metaken that as part of the holiday?
Well, when you give a friend a gift, there is a sense of togetherness. You know, I'm giving you a present, so I have a close relationship with you.
Sure.
But did the Jews need that?
Oh, so maybe.
Always use some more achdus. Why not?
Yeah. Well, actually, I think what you're saying might be really deep. First of all, even think about Mordechai. And I haven't seen this in any Sfarim, but I think what you're saying actually makes a lot of sense. We assume that everyone was friends and everything was amazing by the end of the Megillah. But even in the Megillah itself, it says that Mordechai was beloved mirov bana for most of the people. But there were probably some people out there that were very annoyed at Mordechai, right? Even in the Gemara itself, there were rabbis who criticized Mordechai. And said, Mordechai, what are you doing making this whole balagan? Just bow to Haman, right? So we assume that there was love and brotherhood by the end of it, but maybe not. And maybe Mordechai and Esther felt like there was a need to bring more brotherhood, and that's something that Mishloach Manot can achieve. So perhaps. Well, that would explain it in the time of Mordechai and Esther, but that wouldn't necessarily explain it for nowadays. We're assuming these laws are eternal. So why nowadays do I have to bring more brotherhood to each other, specifically on Purim?
I can understand Hanukkah time.
Right.
Because many of the Jews were Hellenists, so it's to bring them together.
Mm-hmm. So why would the theme of unity be important, Dafka, when it comes to Purim? Rav Ezra, ma ta choshev? Any ideas? We're a small base manager, so everybody's got to get involved.
I was interested in writing. I don't usually write notes, but I'm getting into it now.
Awesome. What does Purim have to do with Achdus?
Make sure everyone can celebrate the Chag.
Nachon. Get everyone involved. But again, wouldn't that be true in every holiday?
Everybody was involved. It was the second Matan Torah.
Okay, so everyone accepted the Torah. I thought we were going to say a simpler thing. Everyone was involved because everyone was going to get killed. Right? Everyone was about to get killed. So
everyone should feel like someone has your back.
Right. And they were all for one. And now they've been brought together, so they should celebrate together. Also, there was a war here. I don't know what goes down in a war, but sometimes there could be a lot of lack of unity that happens in a war. And perhaps to bring the unity back, Mishloach Manot could achieve that. All these are just conjecture, just guesses. But there, by the way, there's another element, and that Haman describes the Jewish people as being an am mifurad, a separated people, no unity. So almost to get back, Haman perhaps is the statement of like, we are one, we're not separate. And the Mishloach Manos can and the Matanot Levinim can bring that unity, perhaps. But all of this is just beautiful ideas. What we're going to now do is we're going to find in the text itself the first Mishloach Manot, which inspired Mordechai and Esther to decree Mishloach Manot, so we can understand what Mishloach Manot is really about. And it's quite surprising, it's not what I naturally would have said. Okay?
I have crazy things probably. Because of like the Parshiot also that come at this time as well. It's like, how did we get the Mishkan started and everything? It was like Trumas, everyone like giving what they could, whatever. Giving. And then like, we had the issue at the beginning of the Megillah, they're using the Kelim. It's like it's like another Chede Egel moment.
Right.
And that's what we had, like, you know, in Truma, and then we had Egel Zav, and then we kind of, all those Trumas were Kaparot as well, all these things.
Nechon.
All these Korbanot, and all the Trumot for the Beit Hamikdash, like the food, and then they were like, they're also called Kaparot.
Nechon.
In the Parshiot. So maybe this is like, creating another Truma scenario as a kapara for that. The Mishkan building started with Trumas of every Yid,
mm-hmm.
and then he's bringing them back to that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely connected to the time.
Can you pass over the
issues?
Yeah, for sure. The Gemara itself talks about how the Shkolim that they collected was an atonement for the Shkolim that Haman was going to take. And actually, that's why nowadays we have the Zeich L'Machatzit HaShekel, which we do at this time period. But clearly, there's about the dressing and the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. There's a lot of connections between the Parsha and the Megillas Esther, and definitely it will be fascinating. You know, when we finish the thought to think about how it relates to, you know, the Parsha and Korbanot and all that. Definitely, we should explore that. After all, it's find your own chiddush, right? So it's better if we haven't thought of it beforehand, because then it's a chiddush. Okay. And you always got to bring down the chidushim. So I'm excited to try to figure out the connections. But I want to share first this chiddush, because it was a brilliant chiddush to me when I heard it. So I just want to share it with you. And I could say it's brilliant because it's not my own chiddush. If it was my chiddush, I could say, it's cute. Mm-hmm. But since it's a wise tone, Chacham Rabbi Foreman's chiddush, I can tell you it's brilliant. And he goes even farther. All right. So where is Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'eu? So let's do a word search. All right. Mishloach. We need to find a mishloach, we need to find a manot, and we want to find a re'ehu. So let's start with the easiest one. Le're'ehu, re'ya.
We can find that on wedding invitations.
Definitely find that in wedding invitations. You could find it in the Torah, after Re'echa Kmocha. Find it all at Re'ema Ahuvim, lots of songs. But we want to find a source, the friend in the Megillah itself. Who is called a friend, and there's only one person who's called a friend in the Megillah. That would be the hint for who the original friend was who received Mishloach Manot. So I assume you don't know the Bible by heart, but anyone have any idea?
Was Chagai known as a friend of Esther?
You got a friend, you mean Mordechai?
Yeah, right.
Chagai, not that I know of, not referred to as that in the text.
Because he befriended Esther.
Perhaps, but not in the Megillah itself. Okay, Ezra, any ideas?
No, I would have to.
Yeah, okay, so I wouldn't know either. Actually, the only reason I might know this is because of another shir that I give about this friend, the Uta, the very, very significant word. But, surprisingly, if you look in chapter 2, I believe, or 1, I'm sorry, we have the story of Vashti. Vashti acts up, refuses to appear before the king, and the ministers have her done with. We don't know exactly what happens to her, but it doesn't look good. She's deposed of her queen status. And then look what the Torah writes about in Pasuk Yutes, Perek Aleph. Im ha'melech tov, yitzei dvar malchut lefanav, v'ketev etate paras, ma'adai, v'lo yavor asher lo tavo, vashti yitzei ha'melech achshbrosh, u'malchuto yitzei ha'melech, Liruta hatova mimena. We're going to give her queenship to her friend who's better than her. Vasi's going to lose her queenship, and the minister suggests that her friend, someone who's better than her, will end up taking the queen status.
It actually uses that word?
Liriuta, Rea, same exact Shoresh. Her friend. The only time it appears in Megillas Esther. So, they didn't know this at the time, but we know. Who is the friend who ends up taking the place of Esther? The place of Achashverosh.
The friends.
Who is the friend who ends up taking the place of Vashti? Who ends up being the new queen?
Esther.
Esther. Okay? So it seems, according to our theory, that Esther is the friend who's supposed to receive the Mishloach Manos. Okay? So far we're good?
Okay.
Okay? It's a theory, but let's have it develop a little bit. Esther's the friend. Okay? Now, in that case, who is the giver? Let's look at the words again. Mishloach manot ish l're'ehu.
Achashverosh was the one who gave the queenship to Esther.
You're right. He is the one who gives the queenship to Esther, but he's never referred to as an ish. There's another person who weirdly and strangely is called by the text
Mordechai
an ish.
Ish Yehudi.
Oh, very good. If you look in chapter 2, verse 5, we all know it because it's bolded. So the children will know the Pasuk. Pasuk 2, verse 5, as you have it. In 2, 5, we're in 2, 5. Now you're going backwards. Chapter 2, verse 5. Ish Yehudi aya b'shushan abira. There was a Jewish man, Shmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Kish, ish yemini. Twice it says the word ish. It seems unnecessary. He is the man. Mordechai is the ish. No one else is referred to as an ish. Okay, so if our theory is correct, Esther's the rea, then Mishloach Manot ish l're'ehu, Mordechai should be the one who's going to send a gift to Esther. Okay, with me so far? Cool. So now what we need to find is Manot. Do we have anywhere in the text a gift, manot, a portion, which is sent to Esther. To Esther. Does that ever happen in the story? Where Esther gets a gift of manot.
Didn't Mordechai get a gift when she sent him a change of clothes?
Oh, we'll get back to that. That's when Esther gives Mordechai something. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And there's no language of manot, and there it's Esther giving Mordechai. So we'll get back to that. We want somewhere where Mordechai or someone gives Esther manot. Okay? I definitely never knew this, but it's there. Okay? So let me show you. In chapter 4, 3... So look at verse 9 of chapter 2. So Esther is taking against her will to Haggai's courtyard, and she's being guarded. Esther refuses to wear extra jewelry and perfume like everyone else because she really doesn't want to be chosen. She's taken against her will, and like everyone else, she knows if she's chosen, then she can't go back to her old life. She can't be with Mordechai, who raised her husband or her father. It depends how you look at it, but he can't be with anyone. And watch what happens. And for some reason, she finds beauty in his eyes. And he prepared her cosmetics. Ve'et manoteha. And her portions, the tetla, to give to her. So for some reason, while everyone else just has perfume, tamrukea, we've heard about that, she also has manotea. What's manotea mean again?
Her portions,
her gifts. Okay?
Which were?
It doesn't say. We don't know. We don't know what that manot are. It's a very strange word. Okay? But what we do know is that later in the Megillah, there's a decree to give manot, i.e. gifts of food, to one another. So maybe it was a cookie. Maybe it was an apple. We're not really sure what it was. Maybe it was something else. But there's something special that she has received that wasn't there the whole time, that someone gave to her, and that's the manot. That's the mishloach manot ishleach. So if our theory is correct, so the ish, Mordechai, gives to Esther, the re'ah, manot, right before Esther is about to go in to meet the king, when she's still in the beauty pageant. Okay? Everyone cool so far? Okay, I agree with you that it's like not like for sure, but it's interesting. It could be. Now let's assume that this is right, which means that Mordechai was the one that slipped in manot to Esther. He slipped in a gift, an extra gift to Esther, okay, at this moment. Why would Mordechai do that? I mean, Mordechai probably had some sort of access. I don't know if he could have just approached Esther. She was like in the harem, but he was in the courtyard for some reason. He had some sort of access to these things. So it's realistic that he could have slipped something in.
So why do we think he did that?
Because he's the Ish. He's the man. She's the Rea. And we know later, Mishloach Manot, Ish L'Re'ehu. So working backwards, it must be that Mordechai is the one who slips the Manot. Like I said, I'm not saying it's 100%.
No, sorry, it could be that he's just...
It could be someone else gave the Manot. Could be.
You're saying he made a tikkun at the end to commemorate what he did before?
Exactly. Or she did it. I agree. It's not for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's a theory. It's fascinating.
Or maybe it didn't happen and the end is like Lashlim in there.
Because he didn't give it. Maybe. But you go a whole different way. But let's work on the assumption right now that he's the Ish, she's the Rea, and he's giving her a gift right before she meets with the king. So assuming that that is true, why? Why would Mordechai be slipping a cookie to Esther right before he meets with...
Instead of asking why, ask what?
Like what? So that's a good question.
She didn't have kosher cookies.
That could be. Could
she,
be.
She didn't eat cookies.
She had rice, right? She had zeronim, right? We learned that yesterday. She had legumes.
Seeds.
Right. See, maybe Mordechai slipped her some seeds. Who knows? Maybe it was quinoa. We don't know. Rabbi Foreman actually has a crazy theory. I don't know if it's crazy, but he has a theory that he slipped her a message. Not to reveal where you're coming from. Because it says that she didn't reveal because Mordechai commanded her, but we don't know, we never see where Mordechai commands that. So he says maybe he slipped a message with the cookie, in his words.
When the soldiers came to take her...
Rabbi Foreman. The rabbi has this theory.
When the soldiers came to take her into the king's harem, he told her. That's when he told her.
Okay, but we don't see that in the text. But so maybe he's saying maybe he slipped in a message with the manot.
Because in the next pasuk, it says she doesn't tell.
Right. So, but again, just think psychologically. What was Mordechai doing when he slipped that gift to Esther?
What was he doing?
Why was he doing it?
If she's going to go into the king... So we had to warn her not to say anything about her genealogy.
Okay, so it could be there was a strategy there of like to make sure you don't give up your genealogy, and we're not even sure why that is. But for some reason, Mordechai doesn't want her to reveal his knowledge. The Foreman has a theory about that too, but it doesn't matter so much. So it could be that it's very strategic. Right? Foreman suggests differently. He suggests very simply, Esther's got to be really lonely. Mordechai, remember, came from they were exiled together from Israel in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and he raised Omen, he raised Esther. He was like his mother if her father nursed her, right? He was taking care of her. And suddenly she's taken against her will to the harem of this bad king. She's got to be very nervous, very scared. And she's losing her uncle, her maybe a husband according to Chazal. We're not sure exactly what their relationship was, but they're close. So maybe Mordechai was simply giving this gift to say that even if I can't physically be with you right now, I love you. We're connected. I'm still thinking about you. That's his theory. Okay? That was the first Mishloach Manos. It's not about the food. It's about the message of I'm there with you. Okay? Interesting? Possible? Cool. Now it gets even more interesting. So we found Matanot Le'Avyonim. Now the question is, where's the...
We found Mishloach Manos.
We found Mishloach Manos. Where is the Matanot Le'Avyonim? And now you were already suggesting before that where is there someone who's giving a gift? Who sends a gift to someone who seems pretty desperate and pretty poor? You were saying before. Ezra, what do you think? Who sends a gift to someone else in the Megillah? Besides Mordechai to Esther here, you were saying before, who gave gift? Esther! Esther gives Mishloach Matanot Le'Avyonim. When is that? Again, in chapter 4, verse 4. Mordechai goes out and he dresses like a sad poor man wearing sackcloth. Okay? Mm-hmm. And what does Esther send in this very strange meeting? Esther sends... Tishlach Gadim. She sends clothing. This poor guy, Mordechai. She's sending a gift to him because she thinks that he's poor, maybe lost his job. For some reason, she's trying to give him clothing after it's like a weird thing. It's like, imagine someone just tore Kriya and you're like, oh, here, take this clothing.
Like, it's not that he didn't have clothes.
Yeah, she doesn't understand what's going on here. So then Mordechai comes in and says, no, you don't understand. I'm not Evyon, I'm not poor. The Jewish people are this whole decree, we're blah, 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 we're in a bad situation. So he explains to her what's really going on. But she didn't know that. She thought he was just a poor man. Okay? And now let's see what happens. So Mordechai, basically, at this point, this is the most dramatic part of the Megillah. Mordechai says, stop sending me clothing. I don't want clothing. What do I need? I need help. And what does he ask Esther to do? He asks her to?
Go into the king.
Go into the king. And she says?
But he'll kill me.
But he'll kill me. And then he says?
Maybe this was the reason why God made you queen.
Nachon. And he says a lot of other fascinating things, which is a whole different, really interesting shir that I'd love to learn with you, maybe tomorrow. But let's just stick to this topic. So see, we might think that what was motivating Esther at the end of the day to save the Jewish people was Mordechai's convincing speech, which I'd love to tell you about what the real argument was. But perhaps it was something else. Perhaps what's really motivating Esther to put her life on the line is the fact that she had a relationship with Mordechai. That she realized that Mordechai was always omen, which is like the language of emunah, which is loyal to Esther, and then Esther feels like she needs to be loyal and repay the gift to the Evyon, who's not really an Evyon, Mordechai. And so that's the real Mishloach Manos. She sent Bgadim, but really the gift was her loyalty. That Mordechai was originally trying to send.
If that was the first Mishloach Manos, clothing, why is the minhag to give food?
That's a very good question. By the way, there's an interesting machlokes in the Gemara and in the Halacha whether you are yotze if you give clothing. There is an opinion that you could give clothing, but
this is Matanot Le'Avyonim we're talking about, not Mishloach Manos.
Talking about Mishloach Manos, right, nachon. Right, what she gave, you know what, it works out perfectly. Because what she gave, well, not exactly. She gave the matanot levionim to Mordechai, which is the clothing. Now, if I gave a suit to a poor man, would I be yotze? No. You actually have to give food. So the question stands. If the original one was really clothing, so then why shouldn't that count? Good question. I agree. We could ask Rabbi Foreman. I asked him. He didn't really have an answer, but we could think. It could be that the idea behind it came from here, but then later we needed to crystallize it into something more regular, like food, as opposed to clothing.
Okay, wait. So hold on.
So it's a good question.
It's a good question. I had the same question. But I want, yeah. Ezra's
okay, question. I'm trying to clarify. So she sends the Begadim, thinking that he's poor, but really he's saying, no, I need your loyalty. Just like he needed her loyalty when he asked her not to tell before.
And just like he, no, and just like he showed his loyalty by raising her and by sending the mishloach manos of the cookie to show that I'm still with you even when I'm not with you. I'm always loyal to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Okay.
Pretty cool. Okay. Now, Ad Kan, Rabbi Foreman, I just want to...
But the same thing.
What do you mean?
Then Matanot Levionim and Mishloach Manos are the same thing. They're both like a gift of loyalty.
Yeah.
And neither of them are food. And neither of them are money.
Well, first of all... You're right. One of them might have been food, might not have been. We have no idea.
Okay.
And the other one is clothing that wasn't even accepted. Which is interesting because in the halacha there's a discussion we learned yesterday about when you give someone a gift and he doesn't accept it, does it count as mishloach manos? Hmm. We said yes. But in any case, I don't necessarily know if the halacha as we practice today it exactly aligns with the original mishloach manos, but the idea behind mishloach manos might have started here, and then later it needed to be tweaked to be more like standardized. Okay, that's the best answer I could give. Again, it's not my theory, it's my performance. So really, you got to ask him.
Mordechai was fasting at the time.
So was Esther.
So maybe Esther
gave him some food cookies.
Felt that he should eat something.
Ah, maybe that's why she sent him clothing, because he wasn't fasting. Okay, there's a lot of theories.
Maybe she sent him food as well.
It's possible, but we don't see them in the text. All right. Now, one more interesting... It answers a question that I always had. Okay, we'll see soon, hopefully when we open up the Mishnah Berurah. There's a very perplexing halacha from the brought down in the Mishnah Berurah by the Binyan Tzion, not so well-known rabbi. That when you send your mishloach manos, you're supposed to send it through a messenger. Okay? And even the Mishnah Berurah writes that this is a good thing to do. And I always thought that this halacha was very strange. Because it seems to be counterintuitive. It seems to be the opposite of the whole point of mishloach manos. But what's the point of mishloach manos normally, we think? What are we trying to do?
Connect
to each other. If I send you, and then you give to him, so then I don't even get to give Ezra a hug. There's no connection. It's just, I feel like it's less connected.
Well, when I would give your shloach manos to him, I have to tell him who it's from.
That's true, but is it the same thing that when I give Ezra with a cookie and a big hug, when you're gonna give him and Michael is gonna feel like he gets credit. I mean, that's nice for you, but like, where's the connection here?
The connection would be all three of us.
What makes me really want to go find you now? Thank you. I couldn't thank you right then. I have to go. I'm like, I want to search out of common. That's like extends the.
Nechon. Yeah. So both of your answers are what I gave previously. I said it connects you, gets you involved. I said there's some sort of, there's some yearning and more connection. When I give you a hug, it's like over. Yeah. But when you're still yearning for the other person in a way, there's still like a deeper relationship. So for sure, these are all good answers. A lot of good answers. Shlomo has a beautiful answer that when you're yearning for someone, it's actually a deeper type of love that's connected. And that's the whole idea of Megillas Esther, that God's hiding. So I in the olden days, I wrote articles about this. But this gives me a whole different answer, a whole different perspective. First of all, on a simple level, if the basis for this is really the Megillah, then was there a messenger in the first Mishloach Manos? There was. We see that there's a guy named Hatach who's delivering the messages. So it's based on the original Mishloach Manos who had a messenger, and therefore that's why we do it through a messenger. But in addition, I think it's also the original Mishloach Manos that Mordechai was giving Esther was to say that even when I'm not physically with you, I'm still with you. So when I give Michael and Michael gives to Ezra, Ezra's thinking, it's kind of similar to what you guys were saying before, which is that even when I'm not physically with you, I'm still always with you. I'm still always connected to you. So that's just brackets of my chiddush that came from Rabbi Foreman's. I told him, he thought it was cool, but he didn't put it in the video. Oh well, next time. All right, one last wrap-up point for this little mini-shir. Okay. So if Rabbi Foreman's point is correct, that this is the original Mishloach Manos and Matanot Le'Avyonim, so it turns out two things. First of all, it's really important to give Mishloach Manos to those who you're close to, right? If the first one is Mordechai to Esther, his maybe nephew, daughter, who he raised, maybe even wife, according to Chazal, or one opinion in Chazal, then they're really close. And yet he sends Mishloach Manos to her. That's the first one. So clearly, like Rav Shlomo says, it's important to send Mishloach Manos to your wife, to your children, to the people who you love, not just to the random neighbors and strangers. So that's one, which Rav Shlomo says, but now he has a source. And secondly, this is what Rabbi Foreman says, it's really important to send Mishloach Manos to those who are a little bit lonely, to those who are a little bit maybe disconnected. Like Esther, when she was feeling lonely in the queen's palace, you know, she wasn't really feeling herself. And so comes Mishloach Manos to say, I'm with you, I love you, I'm always connected to you. So it's a beautiful time to use Mishloach Manos to connect to those who we wouldn't necessarily think about, the lonely people. And I personally like to write little Mishloach Manos letters and like really like take it seriously and use Mishloach Manos as a time to really connect to those who I'm close to and to those who need a little bit more. Where I want to get closer. Yeah, but I don't tell those people. Hey, you're on my... not close with.
Not everyone who appears lonely is lonely.
Sure.